Okay, so a very interesting description of Yaakov's journey. Yaakov has that nighttime epiphany, that apparition, the ladder, promises from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when that section ends, Vayisa Yaakov Ragla, Vayelech Artsa B'nei Ketem, everything moves quickly, and before we know it, he's at the Be'er Mayim, and he has an encounter with Rachel. Now, this is very, of course, different in its pace than the previous section, where it takes Yaakov 22 psukim to get past the entire nighttime experience. It's not really 22. It's where it's Vayitzah begins pasuk. It's about 12 psukim, but it takes him one pasuk to move quickly to Aram Naraim and experiences a bit of Kfitzas Aderech, and especially the contrasting between the first section, which Chazal say Kafzalo Aderech. There's a lot of misshaped and disheveled geography. Where's Beit El? Where's Yerushalayim? Is he in Haran? Is Yaakov Yosef Ve'el Haran? He's in Haran. He's in Beit El. He's in Yerushalayim. So the geography is all, as we would say, disheveled and mixed. And here the geography is pretty clear. He moves very quickly to the well. Now, what's striking about this pasuk, it's very short and moves very quickly, is first of all, he picks up his legs. There's been a lot of picking up of eyes. Vayiseina vayar, vayiseina vayar. So Avram's always lifting his eyes. Now Yaakov is lifting his legs. So we would think that means that just like Avram's eyes were filled with vision when he sees the Malachim, when he sees the mountain, so Yaakov's legs have vision. Yaakov is driven now that he's girded with this promise and this preservation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the security, now he can walk with vision, and especially in contrast to the frightening or frightened person of the beginning of Vayetzeh, who has to surround himself with stones, who's being stalked, who is unsure where he is. Of course, he's probably sure where he is, but the convoluted geography represents a convoluted mission. Now it's very clear. He knows where he's going, where he's heading, what his mission is. Vayisa Yaakov of Ragla Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem. So there are two verbs to describe his movement, Vayisa Vayelech. But the Arza B'nei Kedem is fascinating, and this is what fascinates the Netziv. What I just described is Rashi. Rashi writes, Mishin is Baser B'sura Tova, after receive the promises of Hashem, Huftach b'shmira, with all the guarantees of success and security. Nasa libos vaglav, his heart carries his legs. V'nasa kalalechas, it's easy for him to walk. Ken b'forish b'reishis rabba. So that's what I just described as Rashi. But the Netziv has a very, very different view. And it stems from the mention of B'nai Kedem. Now, technically, geographically, Aram Naharayim, Iraq, Syria, Iran, somewhere in that area, is east of Israel. We probably wouldn't refer to it as traveling to the east. We'd refer to it as traveling to the north, northeast, maybe. And in particular, the Arza B'nei Kedem, don't say Vayelech Kedma, Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem. Arza B'nei Kedem is the Far East. And it's the Far East because we've seen this before. We've seen this in Perek Chafei. When Avram sets his affairs in order, he delivers his gifts, and he dispatches them, these children of Keturah, so these are the people that, according to our tradition, Avram sends east. East of Israel is not Iraq and Iran. East of Israel is China, Eurasia, Russia, Far East. So why is this trip to Iraq and Iran described as a trip to B'nai Kedem? So the Netziv senses this. And he says that B'nai Kedem is only used in the context of black magic. According to the Chazal, the gifts that Avram delivered to the B'nai Keturah were the gifts of black magic. And the territory of B'nai Kedem is associated with the land of magic. It's a parallel situation, parallel pasuk in Bilam's Nevor, this is in Bamidbar, where Bamidbar Chav Gimel Pasek Zayin, where Bilam, the famous, infamous sorcerer, Min Aram Yancheni, Meharei Kedem. So fascinatingly, the Netziv says that the word Eretz B'nei Kedem, or Harei Kedem, is employed to describe people who are involved in black magic. And why is this important? Because now Yaakov is confronting a whole new challenge to his religion. Remember, every step that the Avos take is a step towards creating, towards trailblazing new religious ideas, spreading new religious ideas to foreign lands, to foreign cultures, confrontations with different religious systems. Well, he and his father and his grandfather had resided in Israel for generations, and they had encountered the regnant religious culture, which was Avodah Zarah, good old paganism, whether it was trees, whether it was forests, seas, planets, sea monsters, dirt. People worship physical items. People worship multiple items. And the message of Avraham and Yitzchak had already become deeply entrenched in Yaakov. Hashem is transcendent. He's not in a tree. Hashem is integrated. He's not divisible. Hashem is exclusive. There aren't many. That trial had already passed. Now there's a whole new trial, whole new test, whole new conflict. That is the face-off between monotheism, and part of monotheism is prophecy, that Hashem delivers information to his prophets, selectively, Moshe's prophecy on demand, POD, but most of the Nevi'im have to wait for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to choose and select when and where and how and what. And in the never-ending struggle to divine the future in a very, very random world in which human beings felt vulnerable, sorcery and wizardry and black magic were very useful. And now he's traveling to a land which is very popular. And Lavan is a master sorcerer. And at the end of the parsha, Lavan actually fesses up. I tried to realize why I was getting so wealthy, and I consulted with my magicians and sorcerers, and they told me that it's because of you. So Lavan practices sorcery. And anyone who practices sorcery in Tanakh, whether they live in the Far East, whether they don't live in the Far East, they're referred to as B'nai Kedem. So Yaakov is traveling really northerly, but he's entering a cultural contest and conflict and clash with B'nai Kedem, with the heritage of black magic that was now entrenched in the far, far east since Avram sent it there. Now keep in mind, this is part of the drama of the rest of the Sefer and the beginning of Sefer Shemos, where the Egyptians were also fixated, obsessed with black magic. Yosef presents himself in the guise of an Egyptian as a sorcerer with his cup. The Chartumei Mitzrayim are consulted about the dreams, about the prediction of the Jewish downfall. So this is a world which we don't realize and we don't recognize that much anymore. But it's a world that was very popular and very hypnotic in those days. And Yaakov is now encountering a very different trial, a very different struggle. It's not about, is God transcendent or is he in a rock or ocean or mountaintop? It's a very, very different challenge about the future, about Emunah. Are you obsessed with the future? Or Tamtim, Hashem Elokecha, you don't need to know the future because you have faith in Hashem. Is there a future that you can intuit through magic? Or is there no future because of human Bechira Chavshis? Will HaKadosh Baruch Hu deliver important words? There are three or four fundamentals of monotheism that will now be ironed out in this clash between Yaakov and Lavan. And that's why the Torah describes him as lifting his feet. Lifting his feet doesn't mean quick and rapid. Lifting his feet means deliberate, careful, and cautious. When you have nothing to fear, you let your mind wander and your feet just move naturally. But now, Yaakov has to lift his feet carefully, watch his way, guard his values because of this new culture clash that he's engaged in. In fact, he's aware of it. I don't think the Netziv mentions this, but it's fascinating. When Yaakov has his first negotiation with Lavan, and he first asks to leave, and Lavan says, how can you leave? Nichashti, I've consulted with my magicians, and they've told me you've been the source of such prosperity and such welfare. So Yaakov says, Vayivarach Hashem oscha liragli. Hashem blessed you because of me. Therefore, you're right, but he recognizes that he was very careful about his steps. He uses the word regal. Actually, has a whole different shot for the word regal, but So he's aware that he's been walking carefully, one foot in front of the other, deliberately and cautiously. So what's the message of this Nitziv? What's the overarching message? Fascinating, fascinating, very creative, new deductions and inferences about the word B'nai Kedem, about the lifting of your feet carefully rather than, as Rashi sees it, a very enthusiastic, almost gallop, free care and free of any care, not careless, but free of any care and enthusiastic. So first of all, it reminds us to think about magic and sorcery and predicting the future. Now, we don't really live in that world anymore, so it may sound quaint and antiquated, but modern wizardry is called statistics. We try to predict the future and assume trends, and it's just as subversive of the notion of freedom of choice today as it was then. Black magic essentially subverts and sabotages, denies the notion of an unknown future because we write the future, and statistics convince us that we're just numbers in a large computational machine because we can predict the future. And Corona has certainly reinforced the sense that we're really small and really faceless and we're just numbers as part of an overall trend. How many will get sick and how many will be on ventilators and how many we need social distance and how many days and how many will die and how many young and how many old. And it's been one large statistic fest the last 8 or 9 months. And of course we have to, because these are the tools available to us to help stabilize our decisions and render wise and balanced decisions. But we can't let the impulses and the whispers of statistics and statistic inevitability worm their way into our hearts and minds and convince us that we have no choice in this world and we have no freedom to make decisions. But in a larger sense, structurally, this Nitziv reminds us that we do encounter new challenges in life. And sometimes they're harder for us to shift on the fly. We're fighting the old battle. We don't realize it. Or too confident because we feel like we've overcome a certain challenge. And life is, and especially Yaakov's life, it's so many evolutionary changes. Each parsha is a different type of challenge. Family, Esav, Lavan, Yosef, Paro. It's really Yaakov's adaptability and versatility and the consciousness that he has. That he's now facing a whole new set of circumstances. And we don't always make those adjustments. We sometimes are stuck in these ruts. We succeed, and that success sometimes cultivates a full sense of confidence, and we're still in the same mode. We don't adopt. So Yaakov is adopting, and he realizes that now he can't just walk as freely as he did in Israel. We had already defeated paganism, and he felt legitimately invulnerable to the sway of paganism. Now he realizes a whole new battle he has to fight, and he watches his steps very carefully. Shabbat Shalom.